while in South Africa, I gave a topic that I would like to present here, which is fundamental to why we are here in 1975 after the Feast of Trumpets. For many of you knew that there was a general thinking in the church that the crisis would befall the United States and the church by 1972. And I want to address that question, though it is not passé in one sense. I think it holds a key to many of the problems and some of the doubts that people have had. For if we had understood in advance what was to occur in 1972, which did in fact, we might well have understood in advance the trends that have taken place since, and we certainly would have seen the world events in a different light. I would like to have us go through the book of Revelation and take a look at the 10th chapter, which is the one chapter in the book of Revelation that for most of us we've never understood. In fact, had we understood the 10th chapter, we would never have focused in on 1972 as we did, but we would have seen it in an entirely different perspective and would have seen the state of mind of the church today. But we won't look at chapter 10 immediately. We're going to look at the book of Revelation and see how chapter 10 fits in. Had we known it, there's the possibility that some who left would not have, and certainly we would have been much more aware. I want to draw attention to a fundamental principle that Mr. Gene Carter and I were just briefly discussing on the phone last night. I've known him since the first year or the second year of college. This is many, many years ago, at least about 1948. It's hard to realize how much time has gone by since. It's 27 years. One of the rules that any great economist will tell you, and I obtained this from the Economic Report, that Messrs. Story and Book, we call it the Storybook Report, they're Canadians, have published. It may be summarized such as this, that economic or political or anything we anticipate often takes much longer to develop than we think it should. But once it begins to occur, it develops much faster than we anticipate. Now, in terms of prophecy, I think this is fundamental, that what we have thought would occur has taken much longer to develop. But when it begins to occur, it will reach a climax much faster than we anticipate. Let's put it down. I've stated it twice so you grasp the picture. We said in the 1950s, the beast is rising. We have captions like this in The Plain Truth. I want to say, brethren, that's not true. The beast hasn't risen yet. I think we might as well face it. There was an indication that indeed it was going to on the basis of what was developing. And in 1953, of course, the remnants of the Nazi Party attempted to overthrow the West German government, but it, under Naumann, Naumann's efforts came to nothing. Most of you have forgotten all about it or never heard of it. There was a revolution, of course, in Berlin, East Berlin in 1953, and then we had the Hungarian Revolution in 1956. That just seems so recent, and yet, that's 19 years ago. It's almost a generation ago. There was the Pope who vigorously was speaking out against communism, and all of that has changed. So that in reality, not only has the beast not appeared on the world scene, there aren't 10 nations organized yet, and this is 1975. So let us face the fact that often what we anticipate occurs much more slowly than we imagine. But when it begins to develop, it occurs much more rapidly because indeed the world situation is of such a nature today that actions must take place fast to prevent the kind of crisis that the nations all fear. But in the meantime, the economic power of nations is far greater, and governments are now willing to exercise economic power such as they were unwilling to do in 1929 through 1932, which led, of course, to the Great Depression that no one wants to go through again. Now, what we are saying then is, when many of the things we anticipate a religious persecution. I think there's no question in terms of the biblical statements in chapter 12 of Revelation. But today, the religious power that we have foreseen as the institution behind it, that power is more divided, more confused than ever before. That in reality, every instrument that one might anticipate, such as the common market developing into a union that is public, that what may look like it one day may not necessarily look like it the next. Because the Bible didn't say it has to come out of the common market, but it surely did look like it in the 50s. It did look like it in much of the 60s, but as the 60s drew to a close, there could be doubts, and I have expressed severe doubts for now several years, in fact, that we will ever find the common market as the political basis for what is defined in Revelation 17 and 18 and 19. Now, the economic basis is obviously there. What we want to do, then, for the moment, is to go through the book of Revelation and to see where we are, and to see the key that was in the 10th chapter that would have helped us to understand much more. But we didn't understand it. We, in fact, thought it referred to something in the future, when in reality it has an entirely different application. And had we known it, I would never have written the booklet, A True History of the True Church, as I did at its close, instead of leaving the whole story of the congregation of Laodicea in doubt for the future. We would have been able to lay it out very plainly as to what the situation is. We didn't then see it. I want to go through the book of Revelation just briefly. Now, we're not going to discuss except to show where it is. And I assume that the majority of you are familiar with things in Revelation, but I'm going to assume that none of you knows it so well, but what we ought to at least summarize some of the points as we go along so we know where we are. The book of Revelation is conveyed to the churches from Jesus Christ through John. John writes to the seven churches in Asia, verse 4, chapter 1. And in this letter, which is a cover letter to the seven churches, there is also a message to seven separate congregations in what was then the province of Asia, now Western Asia Minor or Turkey. And these seven separate congregations have letters addressed to them in chapters 2 and 3. Now, we recognize that, indeed, those congregations were all contemporary, and we are told at the close of each that whoever has an ear, let him hear what the Spirit says to the churches. So every age and every individual should give heed to the lessons that are recorded in each one of those, because there can always be congregations today, like any one of them, and there can always be individuals in a congregation who makes the same mistake that either the congregation or individuals in it made in those seven churches in Asia Minor. And we have always said these two chapters have a dual application. I said so in the booklet. We have said so from the pulpit. There's some people who somehow didn't know that. But we also recognize that the reason why you proceed from Ephesus to Laodicea in the sequence is also the fact that you proceeded along the road from Ephesus to Laodicea as you went, and as the message was delivered to each of the seven churches. And each one of the churches had other cities. These were a part of the major mail route, the major trunk route of transportation. And you went from one to the other. And since the church has a sequence in time, as well as many different characteristics at any one time, we see in here the story of church history laid out. The experiences of those seven churches were chosen to tell the story of the church through history. Now, God could have chosen Corinth, he could have chosen Athens and Thessalonica, or Philippi, or Troas, or Colossae. He didn't do that. These seven churches are to tell something very special. Anything else would have been repetitive. And God, looking down on these seven, found something significant historically through time as well. Then, beginning in the fourth chapter, we now have the introduction to the vision itself. After this, I looked and beheld a door was open in heaven, and John thinks of himself as now in spirit instead of living in flesh. And the experiences he had were unaccountable in his estimation if he were not in spirit. But it is all a vision, as you will ultimately see, because these are visions that he received, as he said, in the very first chapter, while he was in the island of Patmos, and he sees himself as if he were spirit, and the throne of God in heaven is there. So now we have, as we go through, a warning to the church and a message to the church through time. Seven churches. Then we have a specific message that is conveyed to the church for the first time in detail. And this is a prophecy of events to happen such as not even Daniel was given. Now, in this fourth chapter, we have the background of the vision. And in the fifth chapter, we're told about a little book. We're told about a scroll. And this scroll was of the nature of the scroll in that day, and there were seals that held different parts of it shut. Now, normally, there was only one seal on a scroll, and when that was broken, you could unwind the whole thing. But this was different. This had seven different seals, so that you had to break all seven to get the whole story. If you broke one, you only had one part of it. And there was a reason to focus in on singular events through time that should occur. Now, the one who was found worthy was Jesus the Christ, our Messiah, Lord, and Master. He was without sin. If he had not been without sin, this message would not have been conveyed today to the church. God the Father did not determine or reveal everything through the prophets, and he did it usually through Jesus in the Old Testament, like he did here through Jesus in the New. He then was not known as Jesus, but Yahweh, or the spokesman. And apparently in this case, though we are not told how much Father and Son may have discussed the future events, there were things that he has reserved to himself, and there are even things now apparently he has reserved to himself, that is, when he shall choose to make the decision to send Christ to earth, not revealed in the book of Revelation specifically. But here we are now given a message that adds to what Christ was given to reveal in Matthew 24 and the parallel verses in Mark and Luke. It was indeed a revelation that the Father gave to Christ to give to us. Now we note that in chapter 6, the seals are stripped off one by one. And you will note that you already have removed the sixth seal by the time you come to the 12th verse. Now, you've all read about it if you've read the key to the book of Revelation. The book of Revelation unveiled at last, as we published. But you read it right here in the Bible. Don't take for granted the rest of the story just because I say it here. There are six seals being stripped off here, and you can find the other five if you don't have them circled by number. But it shows you how rapidly the six seals are removed, all in a fraction of a chapter. Now, the first five seals, in other words, are discussed in the first 11 verses. And the sixth seal now takes a little longer, and you'll note that the seventh seal begins with chapter 8, verse 1. I'll have you look so you know where it is. So you take a note that the sixth seal takes us through more than a chapter, from chapter 6, verse 12, through the seventh chapter. That's longer than the first five seals altogether in terms of text. And then the seventh seal covers everything in the rest of the book of Revelation, beginning with chapter 8. All right, now we take note of something. We don't know what language was written on this scroll. I certainly wouldn't conceive of it to be Koine Greek. There's no evidence that it was either Aramaic, which is some parts of the Old Testament, or Hebrew. But whatever language God the Father, Jesus Christ, and angels communicate with, that was on the scroll. Their normal means of communication would seem to be basically logical. But what happens every time a seal is removed, then John says, take a look. I saw when the Lamb opened one of the seals, or seal number one, verse 1 of chapter 6. There was a noise of thunder, and four beasts were saying, come and see. And I saw, that's four living creatures of angelic origin, I saw and behold a white horse, and he that sat on him had a bow, and a crown was given to him, and he went forth conquering and to conquer. Now, John is told here, he's told elsewhere to write what he sees. You have to go back to the first chapter. I won't go back to that. But John sees things in the presence of God's throne. And then he writes in Koine Greek, and we have it in English, what he sees. He is not given in the book of Revelation a copy of the scroll. There's no place in all of the book of Revelation which says to John that you don't have to write anything, but I will give you the scroll, and all you do is copy the scroll in as the book of Revelation. It isn't that way. The scroll is just, it's all in a vision, you see. And in this vision that occurs while he is a prisoner in the island of Patmos, he sees in this vision a scroll opened in heaven. And he's not reading off the scroll. Then when one seal is open, you see, the four living creatures in the vision say to John, look, and in this vision, John looks and sees things happening in God's throne, the presence of God's throne. And then he's told in the vision to write down in a book what he has seen. And so after the vision is over, he writes down what he has seen, and the whole thing is vividly presented. Now, whether he saw all this in one dream or not, we're not told. There does not appear to be breaks, but that is irrelevant. I don't think it is important to the story. It was that vivid, however, that he remembered all of this. You know, when you have this kind of vivid dream, it's very difficult to forget or to blot it out, even at 90 years of age. Now, the first five seals take us through a long period of history. If you please, roughly 19 centuries of time. I will not explain them. They have been explained before. But we come to the sixth seal, and there was a great earthquake and events that altered the traditional view of heavenly bodies as we see them. The sun becomes black, and as a consequence, the moon appears blood red in verse 12. And it would appear to have to be stars. Now, whether we can call these meteorites, they have the appearance of meteors shooting through the heavens. They fell to the earth. And there was a removal of heavenly bodies, like a scroll that is rolled up, and the time when every mountain and island is moved out of its place. And kings of the earth and great men and rich men and others are afraid because what they see is in fact some manifestation of God who sits on the throne and of Jesus Christ who is about to pour his wrath out on the earth. And they admit now that the day of his wrath has come and who will be able to stand. That is, they have been told these things and they know, and now it's suddenly a realization that what they thought they could laugh off is going to happen after all. This is in the future. This follows the tribulation, which is described as the fifth seal. Now, in the tribulation described under the fifth seal, beginning in verse 9 and through verse 11, there are indications of two periods of persecution, one of which would be in the past, and the other, which takes place, and is in a sense yet to take place, but just before the day of the Lord. And chapter 6 introduces the day of the Lord. Sorry, the sixth seal introduces the day of the Lord here in chapter 6. All right, now we move along and we note that even though there may be a repetition of false prophets, I'll give you the summary of those, wars, famines, pestilence, tribulation, there's undoubtedly a repetition even of the seals as they're opened once through history and then climaxing in our time again. I think we can often see parallels. Certainly there have been such parallels beginning even with the Protestant Reformation. And the modern sequence of warfare leading up to the coming tribulation and then to the day of the Lord or God's intervention. Chapter 7. After these things I saw four angels standing on the four corners of the earth. These are like the four directions of the compass. We're not talking about a square, flat earth. We're talking in terms that we speak of like the setting of the sun in modern language or the directions of the compass. Now, what you discover is that the consequences of what would happen are temporarily postponed. Another angel ascends from the east having the seal of the living God. He says that there should be a delay to hurt not the earth, nor the sea, or trees, till the servants of our God are sealed in their foreheads, which has reference, of course, to having been given the Holy Spirit. Now, there are many people, in other words, who have come out of the Great Tribulation who are going to be called now because they realize that what has been said by this work today and what is going to be said by this work tomorrow and what will be said by the two witnesses in the tribulation, all of those things are true, and now they're going to act on it, and God gives them time, and so we have 12,000 of each of the 12 tribes, excluding Dan. That doesn't mean Dan is excluded, but it means there is also a great multitude of all nations, including Israel, including more than the 12,000 of each of the tribes and the tribe of Dan, because you have two groups, the specific number and then a great multitude of all nations. So God called more than 12,000 of each, but he called more than 12 disciples, but he chose 12, see. Now, the story of chapter 7 is a part of the sixth seal. We haven't come to the seventh seal, but it shows that there are events between the tribulation and the day of the Lord, and that there is, even after the heavenly signs, a delay, and God's wrath suddenly doesn't come on the earth. But more people are being called, converted, or many were being called, maybe a better way to put it, and some new ones. And now they are really being brought to a place of conversion as a result of what they have gone through. Yes, most of these people could have actually acted before, but there was no opportunity because of the kind of religious persecution. Spiritually, they are now virgins. We're not talking about physical virgins. We're talking about spiritual ones. It has nothing to do with their spiritual past. There isn't a single person in God's church who spiritually was a virgin before he was called. Because we all have been in one way or another a part of the world. And we become like the virgin that is the church. But we have an indication that if they're clothed with white robes in verse 9, that they have become forgiven and are now regarded as virgins. I think that should be very clear. These are people who are converted, hundreds and hundreds of thousands, perhaps even a few million, are suddenly being converted, because if you have a great multitude that can't be numbered, and you could number 144,000, this must be so immense that there's no way to number them. Now, we're able to number all the people who come to the Feast of Tabernacles, but this is beyond the ability looking out to take numbers. And these people have gone through the tribulation. We're told in verse 14, they came out of great tribulation, they washed their robes, and have made them white in the blood of the Lamb. And we're told that there are others, we're told of them also again in verse 9. They stood before the throne, they were clothed with white robes. So you have the picture there also. But God chooses a special group out of them, the 144,000, and out of all of these then, God proposes to build up the work of his kingdom. What has been called in the last 19 centuries don't compare to this. And these people are ultimately those who will neither hunger anymore or thirst anymore. In verse 16, the light of the sun will not be on them. Well, that clearly indicates they're to be ultimately composed of spirit. Because we are subject to sunlight and suntan and sunburn, but when you're spirit, you are not. You don't live in the world of physical matter. God's calling all these because he needs them for the government or the kingdom of God. Now we come to chapter 8. And when he had opened the seventh seal, there was silence in heaven about the space of half an hour. Now, this is not because there are no women there. That's, of course, not the real explanation. the wrath of God has come. And you know, not even the angels have seen God this angry. And when God is this angry, you don't approach him. God has waited all this time. There is a time to be angry and to put an end to sin. And God has reached the limit of his patience and is about to intervene. And so the seventh seal is opened, and here we have the seven angels standing before God with seven trumpets. And you see, that could have happened already beginning with chapter 7 in time, but it didn't. They were told to wait, not to act, till all these people were converted, so that between the tribulation and the day of the Lord, there is a longer period of time than one might have anticipated. That is, why doesn't God intervene, is the question, see? And the answer is all these people are being called yet before this happens. Now we suddenly discover that the seven angels do sound. Verse 6, and the seven angels which had seven trumpets prepared themselves to sound, and then with chapter 8, verse 7, the first angel sounds, verse 8, the second, verse 10, the third, verse 12, the fourth, and we have four angels who have already sounded, and we have finished the eighth chapter, but there are three more to sound, and these are called woes in verse 13. Now in chapter 9, the fifth angel sounds, verse 1. Chapter 9, verse 12, one woe is past, two to come. Verse 13, the sixth angel sounds. I'm going through the movement of time because I want you to see the movement. We're not interested in all these explanations because I'm focusing in on the 10th chapter, not every chapter. In other words, the seventh seal is made up of seven trumpet blasts, of which there are four introductory and three very terrible. Now, at this point in time, there has been a normal movement. There isn't any question that beginning with verse 6, we have moved from one seal to the next, and when we got to the last seal, save one, that is seal number 6, we are told that there was to be a brief postponement before the next one blows off. That is the next seal is taken off and the trumpets blow. And a certain number of people are introduced who are being called. And now we're moving along under the seventh seal, and you have one trumpet after the other, and now you have 6 that have sounded. And the question is, what happens? Because we are not told that the seventh sounds until verse 15 of chapter 11. And the seventh angel sounded. So what we want to do is look at what happens in between. Now up to this point, John is seeing the focus on the book that Christ is opening. And when this scroll, rather than a book, is opened, then we have a picture of what happens based on what was written, and John then describes what he sees that happens. Now, we also know that as we proceed through the rest of the book, there are insects, that somehow other parts of the book don't continue the story flow without giving some background. And there is a break in the story. Now, we'll take an illustration of the break in the story in a moment. Chapter 12 is an illustration. Now, there appeared a great wonder in heaven. A woman clothed the sun and the moon under her feet, and upon her head was a crown of 12 stars. She was with child, travailed in birth, and there appeared another wonder, a dragon. And the woman produced the child. The dragon sought to devour the child. And she brought forth a man-child destined to rule the nations, verse 5, with a rod of iron. And the child was caught up to God to heaven. And the woman fled to the wilderness, verse 6. And there was another war in heaven which follows. The great dragon here fought against Michael. And now salvation has come, verse 10. And we're told, you see, that the devil, who at this time is very angry, goes to make war with the remnant of her seed, verse 17. Now when the woman flees the first time in verse 6, it's for 1,260 days or years. And here, the last time she is given help is for a half a time, the time and time, verse 14. So we discover that the woman flees twice. Now we've understood this before because in reality there is a tribulation of the Middle Ages that in a sense comes up to the tribulation but doesn't introduce the day of the Lord. That's like saying that when the seals were opened, it happened once, but it also happens again. Many things are dual in prophecy. But the next time it happens in full force, it will lead to the day of the Lord. The first time it didn't. Well, look at chapter 12, verse 1. There appeared a great wonder in heaven, a woman clothed with a sun. Now, this is an introduction. John sees something remarkable in heaven, and he describes it. And in chapter 13, we're told here of a beast that he sees rising out of the sea. Now, chapter 12 is the spiritual history of the church in simple one-chapter explanation with a focus on persecution and flight, and the devil seeking to destroy the church. Chapter 13 describes, as an introduction, the political power and the religious power. You will note, it was given to this political power, verse 7, to make war with the saints. And the period of time was again 40 and 2 months, verse 5. And then there is a religious power who works with that individual, who heads the political power. Well, chapter 12 is certainly an inset all by itself, a separate story. Chapter 13 is an inset in two parts. In a sense, these modern chapters don't really tell the story. You could have had a separate chapter in more than one place, but we tend to say, well, a chapter should be so many verses, and that's the only reason it's done. This isn't original. This is done by men. You really have an inset in an economic city power as well. Ancient Babylon was a religious center, it was a political, it was an economic center of the world. Chapter 19, and after these things, I heard a great voice of much people, or a voice of many in heaven, and of course the whole vision takes place there. All the plagues are poured out in God's presence. Everything takes place. It isn't a question of people being in heaven. It's a question of where the vision is taking place. Salvation, glory, honor, power to the Lord our God. Excuse me. And now the church as a whole is pictured as having prepared itself, ready to reign with Christ, who has come to rule and to punish the kings of the earth and their armies, verse 19. And I see another angel come down from heaven, chapter 20, and Satan is bound and the saints reign. And I saw a new heaven and a new earth, chapter 1 and verse 21. And then he shows something in chapter 22, which might just as well be a part of chapter 21, because those two really flow together very directly. And here in this last story, we have the holy city. Blessed are those who do his commandments, that they might have a right to the tree of life, verse 14. Because outside are dogs and sorcerers, that's homosexuals and sorcerers and whoremongers and murderers and idolaters and whoever loves and makes a lie or a falsehood. So that not everybody gets in. It's those who keep the commandments who do, verse 14. Now, the reason I went through all these chapters is to let you know something. That each one of the chapters, or if the chapter is not a proper division, maybe even inside, or maybe two chapters should have become one, but they're all introduced by a direct event. I saw a new heaven and a new earth. I saw an angel come down from heaven. I heard a great voice of multitudes, you see, of the people who are spirit in God's presence. I'm just going backwards. After these things, I saw another angel. And there came one of the seven angels, and he talked with me. And I heard a great voice out of the temple saying, and I saw another sign in heaven. And look, and behold, the Lamb stood on Mount Zion. And here is a beast that comes out of the earth, and then a previous beast, those two things in chapter 13. And then there's the great wonder in heaven. These are all introductions of remarkable events that take us into the background and fill in the story, either religiously for the church, politically or economically, or religiously for the world. And now we want to look at chapter 11. We're going to work back to chapter 12. Now there was given me a reed like a rod, and the angel stood, saying, Rise and measure the temple of God. Well, when you look at chapter 11, verse 1, this is a most awkward way of introducing something new. Now, I want you to note that beginning with chapter 12 and on, there is a clear break from what precedes. Well, we have taken for granted something everywhere in our explanation, that chapter 11 begins the first inset, and that chapter 10 is a continuation of chapter 9. We have taken for granted, that is most of us, that chapter 11 begins with an inset. And yet it's the one chapter that doesn't have a logical break from what precedes. You note that each one or the other is a clear break. There appears a wonder. Chapter 13 may have to have a new introduction. The text may vary there, but that's unimportant. There is a clear break wherever an event happens. In all of the others, when you have an inset chapter that tends to fill in the story in the background. Why then does chapter 11 not start with this kind of a break? It just says, and there was given me a reed like a rod, and the angel said, Rise and measure the temple. After you have had the story of the sixth angel sounding the trumpet. Well, the answer to the question is this. Chapter 11 is an inset, but a part of an inset that begins with chapter 10. We have assumed that chapter 10 is a part of the sixth trumpet, and that 11 is the inset, and that was our mistake. The mistake was made because we didn't understand chapter 10, and therefore merely passed over it, because after all, it says there were seven thunders, and what the seven thunders said was sealed up, so we rather passed over it, see? Because we didn't understand it. But now look at chapter 10, verse 1, and see if this is not, in fact, the same kind of inset we've had all along. And I saw another mighty angel. After six angels had blown a trumpet, but before the seventh one does, because the seventh doesn't sound until verse 15 of chapter 11, we now have an inset, because here is an angel out of sequence, right? Between the sixth and the seventh trumpet is an angel out of sequence who comes down from heaven, clothed with a cloud, and a rainbow was upon his head. His face was, as it were, of the sun, and his feet as pillars of fire. And he had in his hand a little book, open. And he set his right hand upon the right foot upon the sea, and his left upon the earth, and cried with a loud voice, as when a lion roars. And when he had cried, seven thunders uttered their voice. We have assumed, brethren, that all of this is the part of the sixth trumpet. This was our assumption, that all of this takes place well into the day of the Lord, which it doesn't at all. Because this is an inset by another angel and not the angel that blew the sixth trumpet. Am I making that clear? And because chapter 11...